Good morning. You are listening to First Coast Connect. I'm Al Letson, sitting in the big chair, coming to you live from Studio 2 at WJCT. Today, the latest on Duval County's public school superintendent search. Then, Jacksonville Public Education Fund hosts Ed Talks, and Create Jax is here with this week's most anticipated events. All that and more coming up. Take a deep breath. How is everybody doing today? It's Thursday. We got one more to go after this, and then it's the weekend. But first, Duval Schools is still working to land a permanent superintendent. The former superintendent, Diana Green, took a leave at the beginning of June this year and officially retired in July amidst a wave of teacher misconduct complaints. Will Brown, a reporter with Jacksonville Today, has been following the story, and Will is here with me now. Will, how are you?
I am great. Good morning.
Good morning. And listen, you at home, yes, I'm talking to you, you can join the conversation. Give us a call, 549-2937. You can tweet us at FCC On Air, First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. We are here for you and asking you to join the conversation. So, Will, when I was beginning this conversation, I started off by saying former superintendent Diana Green took leave at the beginning of June this year and officially retired in July amidst a wave of teacher misconduct complaints. That is an oversimplification of the situation when it comes to Dr. Green and her tenure as superintendent. Can you kind of fill in the blanks for me a little bit?
Well, a lot of these blanks were started by my wonderful but departed Jacksonville Today colleague, Claire Heddles, who did some outstanding reporting. In short, there were a number of teachers, I think four, during the second half of the 22-23 academic year, who were placed on leave for a variety of misconduct issues. One was arrested and charged, he has since pled not guilty. And after he was arrested, he took retirement. Others were for just comments that were said in the classroom. And school board member Lori Hershey says that what took place at Douglas Anderson School of the Arts was the game changer for her in terms of Dr. Diana Green's tenure as superintendent of Duval County Public Schools. When Dr. Green was forced out, when Dr. Green took retirement earlier this spring, some school board members even mentioned like the shooting that took place at Raines High School in 2018 as justification that she's not keeping children safe. That was what they were saying.
Yeah, all of this sounds really trumped up, and I would just say that as a parent in Duval County,
as I am too.
Yes, I'm much older than you though. I'm about to go back on you.
You're a seasoned saint.
I'm a seasoned parent. I don't have children in Duval County schools right now. All my kids have graduated, but three of my kids went to Douglas Anderson, and one specifically of the people that were removed out of the classroom. And I would say that, like, you know, back in the day, like, you know, we're talking about, 2015, maybe even before that, like, I did a lot of volunteer work at Douglas Anderson, and I worked with a lot of students. And I would hear comments about this teacher way back then, right? So I guess the point I'm trying to make is that this one of the teachers that was removed out of the school, everybody knew what was going on. At least all the students that I talked to, and including my kids, knew that, like, this person was not, was being a little extra in the classroom, being inappropriate in the classroom. I won't say that, like, they knew specifics of it, but I would just say that, like, there was a lot of inappropriateness in with this individual. So that predated Dr. Green's tenure as superintendent. So using something that predated her, as well as, like, going all the way back to 2018 with the shooting at Raines, it just feels like, you know, from an outside view, that these charges were somewhat an excuse to push forward an agenda.
Well, you know, this spring, the people who supported Dr. Green, just from the observations that I had sitting in school board meetings, We're a multi-generational, multiracial, multicultural background of people who believe that she was doing fantastic work for Duval Schools. You know, it was everyone from the NAACP to organizations that were trying to curb gun violence, to pastors who supported her. Even former Congresswoman Corrine Brown came into the school board, and I think she said out of a 1 to 10 scale that Dr. Green deserved a 10+.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the few times I saw a bit of a chuckle from Dr. Green about that conversation. You know, there are obviously others who had criticisms, some of which were about keeping children safe, about Douglas Anderson, and some of the complainants had took issue with the perceived lack of transparency from the district from a financial perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not to say, like, everything that I was saying is not to say that, like, there weren't valid critiques. I'm just saying pinning teacher misconduct that has been going on for years to a superintendent and making that the reason seems like there has to be other things that were involved in it, other issues that people had that I don't know, like, people haven't spoken to.
You know, there hasn't.
I'm putting you in a tough spot. I know, because like, there as a reporter, there are things that you know and facts that you can back up, and then things that are unknown.
Correct.
And things that you cannot back up factually. And here at WJCT, we deal in facts. And not in innuendo and all of that. I'm merely saying. So I'm not asking you to comment on rumors. I'm merely saying or asking. What are the concrete things that have been pointed to as to why she was pushed out?
I mean, really, the Douglas Anderson situation was really what, you know, led four members of the school board, because it was a 4-3 vote that got rid of that led to Dr. Green led to the school
deciding
board
deciding to leave, right?
Accepting her mm-hmm. retirement after 5 years. You know, she has not finished working. She's now the CEO of the Children's Literacy Initiative. But I've heard from people in town. She's still been in town over the last few months, doing big things. But the Douglas Anderson situation really seems to have been
a tipping point.
A tipping point, yes.
Yeah. And would it be safe to say that the four members of the school board that had issue with Dr. Green, that they are in line with Governor DeSantis's way of thinking as far as education is concerned?
No, actually.
No?
One of the people who did approve, one of the four, the current chair, Dr. Kelly Coker, you know, has proudly stated, like, she's on the figurative to defeat list mm-hmm. of school board members that has floated out there throughout the state. Of school board members from a variety of districts who are coming up for election or re-election in 2024. And Coker has expressed a bit of pride that she is on that list of people to defeat.
And we've got a comment from Tom on Facebook. He says, with the growing influence of Moms for Liberty, we need a superintendent that will stand up for their teachers. Dr. Green just sacrificed and dedicated and innovative teacher, Amy
D'Onofrio,
excuse me, when there was a backlash against her empowering students during the name change process at their school. I do know a little bit about this, because this was a story that I reported many, many years ago about the change from Nathan Bedford Forrest High School this was the Lee High School.
Yes.
This was the change of Lee High School into Riverside High School, correct? And if I remember correctly, the teacher in question was really advocating for the kids to have a voice and speak out against this.
Yes, and I think she had like a Black Lives Matter flag in the classroom, and that was apparently a problem.
Yeah.
And I think, if I recall correctly, again, Claire Heddles did some fantastic reporting for us at WJCT about it. But I want to say that after the flag was unfurled in the classroom and she accepted a settlement from the district, and everyone's kind of kept it moving.
Yeah. And we're going to go to the phones. We've got Elizabeth on the west side. Elizabeth, how are you this morning?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good.
I'm actually over on the Intercoastal West. I'm calling because I think that this whole situation around Dr. Green is just tragic. You know, I think she was a great champion for our schools and our students. And when you bring divisive politics like Moms for Liberty has done on our school board, you see these agendas move forward without regard for our local voice, our local control, the wishes of the community. We've already seen the school board just passed restorative justice program, and one of the board members went to the Department of Education to try to get that program investigated. And it's not the will of our community, the things that they're doing. I'm part of a group called Public School Defenders, and we're working really hard to make sure that our public schools are protected and that the community knows the truth about what's happening with these kind of witch hunt political agendas going on.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for calling in and your comment. Will, who on the school board is aligned with Moms for Liberty?
Well, we're confident that April Carney is one who was elected to the school board with a strong assist from Moms for Liberty. Moms for Liberty has said that they are an organization that advocates on behalf of children, and they say that they put children first. That is what they say. I think last week when Governor DeSantis was here in Jacksonville, they were wanted to discuss COVID policies and not having the government force people into taking COVID vaccines, including the new vaccine.
It's interesting that they don't want to force people into taking the COVID vaccine, but they do want to force people to not be able to read certain books. It's sort of like we don't want to be forced to do this, but yet we want to force you to do that, right? Like it's holding the two things together. Like it just at times doesn't make sense.
You know, I saw someone at the Governor DeSantis event 1 week ago with a T-shirt, a Navy T-shirt that said, "My body, my child, my choice, my rights." That is their perspective as a parent. I don't hide the fact that I'm the parent of a Duval County public school child or Duval County public school student. And that helps inform my reporting. I don't editorialize at all, but I'm on Duval County public school campuses all the time, either as a parent. Students at my child's school don't know me as a reporter. They know me as so-and-so's dad.
Yep.
So people are entitled to their perspective, but April Carney is definitely one who has ties to Moms for Liberty. I think it'd be unfair for me as a reporter to say that there are others who are connected with Moms for Liberty, because I don't know with 100% certainty.
Sure,
but I'm confident about board member Carney's connections to the organization.
So what's going on with the hunt, the search for, and actually before I do that, let me just say that you listeners can call in and join this conversation. You can call us at 549-2937. You can tweet us at FCC on air, First Coast Connect at WJCT.org, and you can hit us up on Facebook or Instagram. And I was just asking you, Will, so what exactly is going on with the hunt for a superintendent?
So the superintendent, if you'd like to be the superintendent of Duval County Public Schools.
No, sir. Not at all.
No, sir, me either. applications are open tomorrow. They open tomorrow and will be open until October 13th. The Florida School Board Association is facilitating the search on behalf of the school board. They have told the school board members that they will not filter anyone. So if you're a first-year English language arts teacher who thinks you can be the superintendent of schools and you apply and you fit all the credentials and you fit complete an application, it will be submitted to the school board. Will you probably get the position? Almost assuredly not. But we do have a list of the qualifications, the minimum qualifications and the preferred qualifications on our website, jackstoday.org. I think for those of you who followed FCC on air on Twitter, there's a photo that that was placed this morning. That's actually a school board member holding up the qualifications. during Tuesday's board workshop. So if you zoom in on that picture, you can read every single word of the qualifications that they're looking for in the next superintendent.
I am 100% sure that I am not qualified and would not want that job for anything at all. Oh, my goodness. No. All right, so we're going to go to the phones. We've got Stanley on the north side. Stanley, my friend, how are you this morning?
Oh, man, I'm doing fantastic, and hello to everybody involved. My first concern, I want to send prompts out to Dr. Green for the city of Jacksonville injustice. They did Ms. Green wrong. Number two, I want to know when we going to take politics out of education? You're doing a disservice to the students, all the students. Students are having a hard time just dealing with their parents. They don't need to be dealing with all this going on in these schools, in the school system. Sorry about that. And this politics need to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Stanley. I don't think politics are ever going to get out of schools. I think when you look at the history of the United States of America, some of our biggest Supreme Court cases around race and segregation and desegregation, all of that stemmed from the schoolhouse, from education. And I think that education I hear what you're saying, Stanley. I wish that could be true, that we could take politics out of schools, but history tells me that that's not going to happen, and that actually, like where we are right now, our school grounds are a battleground for many different. I kind of don't like the term culture war because it makes it sound like the culture is not as important as politics. You know, it seems like an offshoot, but it's actually fully a part of the main, you know, political clash. But we can see that, like, those wars are playing out here with groups like Moms for Liberty and groups that oppose Moms for Liberty. We see all across the country last couple of years when it came to COVID, like, that it was the number one, you know, the first battleground about masking and all those type of things. So, I totally hear what you're saying, but I don't think that that's going to change anytime soon. And we've got a caller on the line, I think. It's not coming through yet. But if you want to join the conversation, you can call in at 549-2937. You can tweet us at FCC on air. First Coast Connect to WJCT.org. And the caller is here. We've got Philip on the west side. Philip, how are you this morning? Philip, you there? Philip. All right, so Philip's not there. If you call back, we will get you on. So, Will, when it comes to the hunt for a superintendent, are there any candidates that we know that are going to apply, people that we would know that are going to apply?
I wish I could say yes. But it was a bit of an amusing moment, at least to me, during Tuesday's board workshop. When the school board members noted that, you know, people will ask about who will apply for this position once they start applying. And I nodded vociferously and let them know, of course, I will be sending in a public records request. It's a guarantee. I mean, is my name Brown? Am I tall? Yes.
I can affirm that your name is Brown. And for listeners who don't know, he is tall.
So I will be sending in a public records request. Probably multiple times a week. So I do not know who will apply, but that was one of the concerns initially of the board, that they did not want to become a Broward County 2.0. And what's happened down in Broward County is their superintendent left, and the board tried to open up the superintendent search, and they did not get the quality of candidates that they were expecting. And that led to, the Broward School Board. They eventually found a superintendent, but the process was longer and more convoluted than they initially thought. The Duval School Board was cognizant of that, and so that was one reason why some members of the board, Warren Jones was one, and I think Charlotte Joyce was another, who this week were looking to see if maybe they could slow down the search a little bit so they could get a candidate to come in at the end of the year instead of coming in mid-year. But you know, Tuesday's workshop wasn't something where they could take action, but they did come to the consensus that they wanted to keep the timeline that that was established earlier and had been communicated to the community, that the new, you know, the applications will be open until mid-October. They'll select some semi-finalists in October. The finalists will be here in Jacksonville if the timeline stays as currently indicated. The second weekend in November 16th and 17th. And then, you know, I hope no one's going out of town for Thanksgiving, because the new superintendent may be selected on Tuesday, November 21st, which is 2 days before the Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah. And we've got a comment on Facebook. It's thank you for the conversation, Alan. Will elections matter? And there could potentially be 6 of the 7 board seats on the ballot next year. Is that accurate?
There is I want to say there's a lawsuit that's being adjudicated at the moment about whether in terms of the maps, the redistricting maps, again, elections matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that part of the comment is 100% elections matter.
Yes.
The part I'm asking is about like our six of the 7 chairs.
My understanding is 4 are definitely going to be up for re-election, and then 2 others, depending on some lawsuits, may also be up for re-election, depending on how that goes. So it's possible that 6 of the 7 are up, but my understanding is 4 definitely are.
Yeah, I think the thing that like we haven't really, or the person that we haven't really talked about a whole lot in this conversation, that kind of looms over it all, is Governor DeSantis and his willingness to actually get involved in school boards, which feels, reporting in Jacksonville for the last 15 years, I don't remember that actually happening with a governor before, being as active as DeSantis has been throughout the state with school boards, and also with his mandates with education, with his his don't say gay and his laws around or his edicts around COVID, all of that type of stuff. Like, he's very involved in it, and also like the changing of the standards of like what can be taught in schools and so forth and so on. It's a lot, and it feels like all of those things puts profession of teaching in the state of Florida in a very precarious situation. And I'm wondering if we're seeing that across the board.
Well, I talk to teachers throughout the region. Most of them just are so, will say, "Will, this is off the record. Like, come on." And they will tell me that the teaching profession has been made more challenging in recent years. And this isn't just, you know, people who lean on the liberal side of the perspective. This is people who are conservative as well, who are like, yeah, it's more challenging. Because there's been so much, so many people trying to put their thumb on the scale in terms of what is taught or what can be taught or what's allowed to be taught. So it's, you know, and it's not just, it's not just educators in the Duval district. I go a lot of different places, and we'll hear from educators and just kind of, usually it's like a wry shake of the head of like, yeah. It's a lot tougher now.
Excuse me. I wonder if people who have the same type of qualifications as Dr. Green, nationally, look at like what's happening in Florida as it concerns education, and maybe would think twice about coming to Florida because of the political unrest.
Well, that's what happened in Broward County, and that's what the Duval District was concerned about, was that they weren't getting the applicants that they thought they might. Granted, Dr. Green and the last 2 superintendents of the full-time superintendents have been in-state superintendents. Dr. Green came from Manatee County, and Dr. Vitti came up from Miami-Dade. But also, here's the thing. A number of the bigger districts, because the school board has indicated that they want someone who has experience with at least 25, in a district with at least 25,000 students, as well as some experience in their career of working in rural, urban, and rural rural, urban, and suburban settings, there are not a whole lot of districts in this state that have those qualifications that don't have a new superintendent. The number of appointed superintendents in this state that has turned over the last 2.5 years is more than a dozen.
Yeah. All right, we're going to go to the phones, and Philip from the West Side is here. Philip, how you doing this morning?
Very good. I wanted to comment on what the caller said about taking politics out of the education system, and to state that the reason why DeSantis and his legislature have politics in it is they want to keep people dumb enough to vote Republican. And on a more important note, teachers know when students are failing. To let a student fail is deplorable. What we need to be doing is making retired teachers tutors to help these students to keep them from failing, because a failing student is a failing society.
All right. Philip, thank you so much for your call and comment. We also have a comment on Facebook. Parental rights, it's from Lisa on Facebook. Parental rights as fomented by DeSantis is a misnomer. It only applies to a fringe minority of extreme far-right groups like Moms for Liberty and the white supremacists whom they align. Those who want full quality education for our children, which prepares them to be competitive in the world and to be able to coexist with others who are different from them, we are a majority, and our rights have been denied in service to political pandering, to ignorance, racism, and bigotry. And so that comment is from Lisa. Lisa, I would refer back to the earlier comment from Kate, which said elections matter, you know?
And, you know, I've spoken in professional and personal capacities with a number of PTA presidents in Duval County. I spoke with one last week. We should
do the disclaimer here, though.
We should do the disclaimer.
that your wife is a PTA president.
She is. yes, I am married to a PTA president. She does a lot for our child's school. But the person I spoke with was not my wife about this. It was last week at a superintendent search community meeting at Raines High School. The PTA president of a Northside elementary school, told me that, she really started to get really more involved in her child's school because she saw, quote, policies that are race related that our legislature and governor are doing, close quote. Those are her words.
Yeah. So, when it comes to this subject, it feels like what parents need to do is get active and involved.
Yes.
And make sure that their voice is heard, not just in the ballot booth, but in any conversations that are going on in the school and around. Like, if you don't like the direction that the schools are going in, the only way that it changes is if you show up and you show your power for either side, whatever your belief is, because it seems pretty clear that one side of the argument is showing up and is making changes. And if you don't go out and make your voice heard, then change will happen and you'll be left behind and not actually be able to affect that change. Got to be in it to actually make change.
And that is what that parent told me when I spoke with her last week. She said, I can't sit on the sidelines. I want to be involved.
Right on. Will Brown, reporter for Jacksonville Today. And my friend, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, y'all. And we will be right back. Stay tuned.
Hey, hey, welcome back. You are listening to First Coast Connect. I'm Al Letson, sitting in the big chair in Studio 2 at WJCT. And Duval, something that has never happened before is about to happen. You're just not ready for it. I'm about to sing. No one has ever heard me sing on the radio. Happy birthday to you. Do y'all hear those docile tones coming from my voice? Brady is like, oh my God, he's in love with me just because I'm singing. Happy birthday. There we go. Okay. Happy birthday to you. See, I can't sing in Stevie's key, but yes. And I would say Stevie is better than me singing. That is for my good friend, Rachel Tutwiler Fortune, who has the best last name in forever. Like, Fortune is like a name. It's your birthday.
Yes, thank you. That was so special and unanticipated.
Yes, you're amazing. So, you know, me and the crew had to put it together. Props out to my crew. So Rachel Tutwiler Fortune is the president at Jacksonville Public Education Fund, and she is here with more details about Ed Talks, which is September 27th, and the focus is on resiliency. Mm-hmm. So, Rachel, I've known you forever, it seems. Like, when you first started working in education, now you are the head of this amazing organization. Before we dive into the Ed Talks, tell us just a little bit, like a quick, you know, little summary of like what the Jacksonville Public Education Fund does.
Absolutely. Well, we call ourselves an independent think and do tank. And we're really focused on closing the opportunity gap between low-income students, students of color, and their peers, and overall ensuring that every child in Duval County has access to a high-quality public education. We do that three ways: through our independent analysis of educational issues research, as a convener, bringing partners together around issues that we agree we must address together, and through our strategic initiatives, which allows us to provide direct support to teachers and principals.
What I love about what you just said is that you call yourself a think and do tank. Mm-hmm. And what I love is that, like, you are always doing. You're out in the community trying to make a difference with our students, which is an amazing thing, especially in the times that we live in. So tell me about what the purpose of Ed Talks is.
Sure. Well, Ed Talks is our biennial luncheon. It allows us to bring thought leaders to Jacksonville to share innovative ideas, best practices, and approaches that are working around the country, mm-hmm. sometimes around the world. We're really working, as you just said, to inspire community to act. So we want to be inspired, but we also want to make sure that we're leaving with a clear call to action.
Yeah. And so resiliency, what's that all about? Like, how does that show up in education?
Sure. Well, resiliency is very important right now. It's the capacity to really withstand and recover from difficulties, to bounce back during tough times. And let's be honest, the last couple of years have been extremely challenging. We had a global pandemic, more political polarization than ever, a reckoning with systemic injustice, the acceleration of innovation in technology. All of this stuff happening at the same time.
Yep.
Locally, as you all were just discussing, we have a superintendent search. Next year, the majority of the school board is on the ballot for election. Our community is rallying around persistent challenges in literacy. All of this is stuff that we're working to address together. So it's very important that we all be resilient, but that we also support our students to be resilient.
Yeah. And so who are the speakers and how will this day all play out?
Yeah, we're so thrilled this year to welcome Dr. Sean Jenright. He's the CEO of Flourish Agenda, and he's a professor of practice at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He's a national thought leader, and we're excited to not only welcome him, but actually to make sure that we're uplifting student voice. Mm-hmm. So many of these conversations that we're having around education allows us to center adults and adult politics. And we really want to hear from young people about what they're needing in this moment. So we're going to hear from students on a panel. We're also excited for the first time ever to recognize an outstanding community leader. Her name is Poppy Clements, who is our inaugural Quality Education for All, Nina Waters Quality Education for All Award recipient. So it's going to be a really special time together.
Yeah. So give us the details. Like, when is it? Where is it? All that.
Yeah. So we will be at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront downtown Jacksonville on September 27th. That's Wednesday in a couple of weeks from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. And folks can still get their tickets and sign up to join us. We really want to make sure that as many people as possible take advantage of this opportunity. Our community has been and the world really siloed so much these last couple years. And so it's always refreshing when we can be and take up space together.
Yeah. So after this, what else is JPATH working on?
Yeah. Well, as it relates to resiliency, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, the last couple of years with Ed Talks, we don't just have the speaker. We then convene many partners who are engaged in whatever issue that is so we can talk about what we're going to do leaving the event. And so we're going to have Ed Talks Plus Action and a number of partners who are involved in efforts to support our students are going to come together, really engage in conversations about what they're doing, learn from each other, and really plan some next steps. Dr. Jim Wright is going to also be a part of those conversations, but we're really excited to hold up. We've been fortunate at JPEF to invest in several partners who are invested in student resiliency efforts through support we receive from our statewide consortium. And so many of those partners will have an opportunity to talk about what they're doing through those investments. We're going to talk about what work they're doing with students, the work they're doing with teachers. You all just had a conversation about how, you know, difficult teaching is right now. So we need our educators to thrive and be successful. And JPEF is really proud through our work to also be supporting educators.
All right. So you heard it here. Ed Talks, September 27th. The focus is on resiliency. My good friend, Rachel Tutwiler Fortune, president at Jacksonville Public Education Fund. And it's her birthday, y'all. If you see her out and about in Jacksonville, tell her happy birthday. Just do it. It's a good thing. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Al. Appreciate you so much.
All right. And we will be back right after this. Happy birthday to ya. Yes, you guys got to hear me sing. I mean, that's scary. Welcome back to First Coast Connect. I'm Al Letson, sitting in the big chair in Studio 2. I promise you, you will not have to hear me sing anymore. It's Thursday, which means my friend, my girl, Yaya Cardona is here to tell us about the curated events for Create Jax that is listed this weekend and next week. There is a lot going on. Yaya, you got to start off with, like, tomorrow. Isn't that your event? Do we have your event?
Yes, it is, honey.
I remember.
It's Hispanic Heritage Month. Yes, it's Hispanic Heritage Month, and I am super excited to present the official kickoff party tomorrow, Friday, starting at 6 p.m. at Phoenix District. We're going to be dancing salsa and bachata all night long with DJ Goldo at Phoenix Art District. You got to purchase your tickets at Eventbrite, and your ticket includes a free drink and light tapas, and we're going to be teaching people how to dance salsa and bachata. So come on out, even if you don't know how to dance. This is one you don't want to miss tomorrow night, Friday, September 15th, the official kickoff for Hispanic Heritage Month. I know, Al, I know you're going to be out there, right?
I'm going to cut the rug. I'm going to be there. I am going to be there. Listen, like, I will be on the floor for all the salsa, bachata possibly, but because I could do a little bachata, you know, a little bit, but you know,
okay.
You know, we'll see. I'll be there.
Well, if you come early, we'll teach you the basic steps, and then you can go from there. Because if you get salsa, you can definitely bachata.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And to be honest, I'm rusty on my salsa, so I might do it all. All right, I will definitely be there. What else you got for me?
Well, another event we got going on from starting tomorrow, September 15th, till September 23rd, is Peter Pan on her 70th birthday play. It's at Five and Dime. It's $22. You don't want to miss this. It starts tomorrow at Five and Dime. So if you're into theater, this is one you don't want to miss. It's going to end on September 23rd at Five and Dime. Let's support our local theater people.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Five and Dime is my family. They're good. They always put on good stuff.
It really is. Shout out to Liz McCoy, who's part of that family, too. And then on Saturday, September 16th, there's so much going on. But this is one that I'm really excited about. Placemaking Jacks painted a whole basketball court. They did a mural on a basketball court, and they're going to be doing the unveiling starting at 11 a.m. in the Brooklyn area. It's at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's completely free. So come on out. Check out this. This was done by, it's sponsored by Dublase. They went ahead and got a placemaking grant, and they wanted to do a mural for a basketball court. So that's going to be beautiful. Saturday starting at 1 p.m. Also, don't forget the first Jags game.
Okay.
Ooh,
okay.
This Sunday, baby, at TIAA Bank Field. So I know everyone's going to get ready for that. I can't imagine everybody getting ready for the first tailgating. I will be out there, so make sure you get your Jags tickets for the first home game this Sunday. And September 21st is the 2023 Art Awards.
Okay.
Yes, 2023 Art Awards. I'm really excited about that. That's on Thursday. And afterwards, the after party is at Sip and Stroll, so you don't want to miss that. The venue is Venue 841. You do have to purchase tickets, and it starts at 5:30. So this is Cultural Council's Art Awards. You got to purchase your tickets. This is the event that if you're into art, if you want to get involved in the community, I highly suggest that you purchase a ticket. All the art community will be there. So this is one you don't want to miss. Thursday, 2023 Cultural Council's Art Awards. And on September 22nd till September 23rd is the E.T. movie. Yeah, a symphonic movie by E.T. at Jacoby Hall starting at 7 p.m. That's going to be pretty cool.
I love that movie.
Me too. That's one of the movies that I learned how to speak English with, honestly, E.T.
I love that. That little alien is freaky, and I love it. Yeah. Hey, before we go, I skipped us forward. So, like, on 9/14 today, there's the Through Our Eyes opening reception at the Ritz. Like, I got to give a shout out to that.
Yes, please. Let's do that. There's going to be so many amazing artists presenting today. Roosevelt Watson III, Marcus Williams. They're all going to be there. So this is an event. I'll be there today at Ritz Theater as well. If you have kids that are into art, all of these amazing artists, they love mentoring kids. So bring out your kids to Ritz Theater. That's going to be exciting. Also today is Alice Immersed Cocktail Experience. So if you're into the cocktails, that's something you don't want to miss at Frankie Parties and Banquet.
There we go. All right. Yaya Cardona from Create Jacks, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate all your dates. And, you know, you're going to see me a lot this week.
Yes. Get ready to dance, people.
All right. And we will be right back. Stick with us.
Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com. Scenic Jacksonville presents the Great City Symposium, October 4th. A.G. Lafley, former CEO of Procter & Gamble, shares how he led the revitalization of downtown Cincinnati and the Sarasota Bay waterfront. Tickets at scenicjacksonville.com.
On Wednesday, Kim Jong-un deboarded a bulletproof train in Russia to meet with Vladimir Putin. It was a long train ride, far longer than a flight. We don't know why he won't fly. Maybe he's scared. Maybe he likes to get faxes while traveling. But we do know why he needed to go to Russia. That's next on Today Explained.
Tonight at 6:30 here on WJCT News 89.9. I'm Deepa Fernandez. As hip-hop artists on the West and East Coasts were dominating the genre, Memphis rappers were reinventing it altogether.
People did what they wanted to do, and it gave us a smorgasbord of things from which to sample, which we're seeing the manifestation of that creativity today.
Next time, here and now.
Today at 1 on WJCT News 89.9.
The Parrot and the Igloo. It's not the start of a bad joke, but it is the title of David Lipsky's new book that breaks down why so many Americans don't take climate change seriously.
The minute that you have an A, you have a very angry Z. And so our tendency to overstate has not really been beneficial to this particular story.
That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
My name's Scott Detrow, and I host All Things Considered on the weekends. I really enjoy the challenge of considering all things. You know, you can be on the line with a senator, then you're shifting gears and you're talking to a musician, you know. For the bulk of my career as a member station reporter, I was a statehouse reporter. So many things that affect people's lives are happening in those buildings. In just about every state, there's a public radio reporter there. It is a very challenging time to be a reporter. The business models that made journalism work for decades have gone up in smoke, and people increasingly just tune in to news sources that tell them what they want to hear. Public radio stations have really kind of stepped up in the middle of all of this to tell you the facts, to give you the information you need to make your own decisions. The whole NPR network is stronger with your support. Give to this station today, and thanks.
Please call 353-9528 or visit wjct.org/radio.
Hey, 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 it's Al Ledson grooving on top of Herbie Man. Respect yourself. And today, well, this week, this is Pledge Week, so you know we got to end the show out asking you to send a little bit of love to WJCT. And to help me do that is my good friend, my big brother, Mr. David Luckin. How are you, sir?
I am so good, and I'm so happy that we're halfway through this drive.
Yes.
You know, it used to be 2 weeks of drive.
I remember. I was here.
Exactly.
I was running
out of words, and Al's never speechless.
No.
So now we've reduced it to 3 days, and mostly because sustainers, just like you folks out there, the sustaining program is just such a good thing. It's $5 or $10 a month. You don't even miss it.
Nope.
So give us a call, 353-9528, and show your support for this program, First Coast Connect, which is in its 14th year. Al sitting in the chair now, filling in for us, and we'd never felt better about the program, and we know you think the same way because you're calling in every day. I also look at the ratings, and I know there's a lot of people out there. So you need to call us. If you're listening, you need to call us at 353-9528.
I was just about to say, the other day you told me that the ratings came in, and we have basically doubled our ratings in the last couple months. That's amazing. We did that with you, the listener. Thank you very much. Couldn't have done that without you. But now we need to, like, take that double in ratings and move it double in finances. Like, help us bring you a quality show like this. Every day, I mean, Monday through Friday, the whole crew of First Coast Connect gets up early. We come in here, we have engaging conversations.
And we work late.
We'll
tell the folks the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm usually getting, like, messages from Stacey, the producer, at like 8 or 9 o'clock. I literally have to text her and tell her, go to bed, stop working,
dreaming.
Yes. But we work hard because we want to serve the community. Like, we love this community, and we want to give you the best program you possibly can. And the way you can support that is by calling us now at 904-353-9528. You can make a sustaining donation, like $5 or $10 a month. It just comes out of your account. You don't even miss it. But it means the world to us. It would really change what we are able to do with this station through your funds.
And as newsrooms close down all around the country and yep. newspapers are shrinking their staffs to unbelievable levels, we've actually grown our newsroom. And NPR has more news bureaus around the world than any other news organization in the world. And you know why that happened, Al? It's because of the generous support of the founder of McDonald's, Mr. Kroc, who gave so much money. And NPR took it and was very wise when CBS and NBC and ABC were closing down Beirut and bureaus all around the world. NPR was standing them up. And I say that to show you that your gifts really do matter, whether it's $5 or $500 or, with Mr. Kroc, probably $500 million.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to argue if you want to give us $500 million. I mean,
I'll take $500 at this point.
Right, exactly. Like, whatever it is that you want to give, no gift is too small. I remember,
or too large.
Or too large. Or too large. Let's do away with limits. Yeah. I remember when I was young, I used to listen to This American Life on this station all the time.
Love that show.
And used to listen to, I remember, like, didn't Bunky Green have a jazz show on here?
Bob Bednar. But he had Bunky in often.
Yes,
of the jazz studies.
Yes. I used to listen to jazz on the station.
Jazz,
like,
22 years Bob did.
Yeah, as a young man, like, this station was like a lifeline for me. And there was no way I could have contributed back then. But somebody contributed for me.
Absolutely.
Somebody, like, paid it forward and allowed me to be able to listen to all this great stuff. And so if you're out there today, I would just say, if you have the means, help your neighbor out. You know, we all get through this together. Help your neighbor out. Give a little bit to WJCT so that they can enjoy this quality programming.
We're at 353-9528. We thank everyone who's called so far. We're not there yet, so please don't give up. Help us reach our goal. And we can only do it with your help. 353-9528.
All right. And that is our program. Thank you to all our guests and callers. Our executive producer is music maestro David Luckin, the man sitting right next to me right now. Our producer is Stacy the Brain Bennett, who works way too late. Stacy, work-life balance.
Go to bed.
Our associate producer is Kathy Waterman. She is amazing. She calls me sir all the time, and it drives me crazy. I'm just Al. Our director, the Steven Spielberg of the operation, Brady Corum, my guy. Our theme music is by Club De Belugas. If you have questions or comments, call First Coast Connect or email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Al Ledson. You've been listening to this show on WJCT News 89.9. And remember, y'all, keep your heart open for Duval and each other. And I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.